like to talk to you this morning about some data which may have quite a bearing upon your cases. And that is the whole principle of making space. How it errs in the individual, the misconceptions which can occur as a result of what the GE is doing, and et cetera. The GE is quite concerned with making space. The GE makes as much space as he has a body. He makes more space than he has a body, actually, but that is his space. Actually has a series of anchor points, which, in when the GE is in good shape, are a series of gold balls. Many, many, many of them, which themselves make the structure which the GE is using for space. Now, there is the GE anchor point. In SOPHC, this is remedied by putting the anchor points back in position again. And this is done by getting the preclear to see or contact the anchor points and adjust them. And this is done by getting him to mock up anchor points until he can see anchor points, and getting them to mock up anchor points in the vicinity of misplaced body anchor points until these misplaced body anchor points brighten up, get shiny, and click into their proper position. And when I say click, I mean just that. They click into their proper position. Now, if you could see the body as an electronic structure, which is basically composed of anchor points, which in themselves make the space of the body, you would get a much truer picture than you would get in looking at the body as a head and a couple of arms and a couple of legs. That is not what the body looks like. You go around looking at people and you say, well, that fellow is composed of a head and torso and arms and legs. Well, he wouldn't be composed of that if it weren't for these electronic anchor points. There are a couple of them in the first place, which are the wing anchor points, which go way out, up, and in front of him. They're over here to the right and up, and over to the left and up. And in some people who are in pretty good shape, they are many, many yards away. And in some people who are in terrible shape, they're practically collapsed on the body. Those are two balancing points. They give the body a front space. And without them, the body doesn't have that front space. You run into a preclear who doesn't have any space in front of his body, who can't contact space easily. One of the first things we find is wrong with him is these big wing anchor points out here, and they're quite large, are misplaced, tangled up, or so drained down in terms of energy that they aren't operating as anchor points. If they're drained down in terms of energy, of course, they are out of position too, because they're held in balance electronically. Now, it's very hard to damage the GE's anchor points, but it can be done. And the way it can be done is draining the energy out of them. Now, let me tell you a few more places where these anchor points are. The Chinese unwittingly drew, and I said unwittingly, the Chinese are very, very intelligent people, but they never even vaguely got into this category. They drew some of the key anchor points of the body in their acupuncture charts. The Chinese acupuncture charts demonstrate anchor points. Well, now let's take modern electronics. We find out that there is such a thing called a beep meter, and this beep meter echoes every time there's an electronic liveness in the body. It echoes where pain areas are and so forth, but it also echoes where the anchor points are. And so we go over a body and we take a look at the body with the meter, and we'll find these anchor points on either side of the throat, either side, you might say, of the neck, in the hollow here of the wrist, in the elbow, inside elbow joint. They are back of the knees. They're just many such key places. Now, if you were to displace one of these in the wrist, you could actually, hold your hat, warp the bone or turn the bone at the place where you put the anchor point newly. In other words, you have a new joint. The body responds to the positions of these anchor points so thoroughly that you just might as well say that the body is a sort of a jelly, an illusory jelly, which is pretending to be solid amongst this truly solid structure of anchor points. If you look at a preclear as being an illusion hung up by spatial anchor points, and the spatial anchor points is real, you can do an awful lot with the body. If you keep looking at him as having arms and legs as his basic anatomy, you'll get nowhere. The reason medicine has failed lies mainly in the fact that it never got down to physical structure. The medical doctor studies the tibia when he ought to be studying an anchor point. The broken bone can occasion an enormous amount of distress to an individual. But what happens when the bone is broken? And what is the first manifestation which an auditor could contact that would remedy the break? It would be the derangements of anchor points. How about a sprain? It'll knock out anchor points. Sometimes on a sprain, if the preclear, it's only sometimes because the preclear occasionally is unable to contact such an anchor point. In the case of a sprain, if you were to ask the preclear to locate the misplaced anchor point in the area of the sprain and mock up a few anchor points like it, you know, and throw them away, and mock up a few more like it, throw them away, mock up a few more like it, and then push the anchor point back into position again, you would find the sprain going zzz, gone. The magic associated with spiritual healing or electrical healing or something of that character is a magic that takes place because of the existing anchor points. Now, we see a homo sap walking down the street out here. We're sailing along, minding our own business or flirting with the birds or something of the sort. And this homo sap is walking down the street, and we want him to stop. One of the best ways to stop him is not to go up and whisper in his shell-pink ear, you will stop now. No, one of the best ways is simply take hold of one of his big wing anchor points and just pull it around and wrap it around the other anchor point. He will be so confused, he will stop. He'll suddenly be very confused. Now, supposing we wanted to turn him around and have him walk down a path in another direction, let's just get hold of one of the wing anchor points and pull it out of position until he finally turns down the path, because he will. And when he turns down the path, let it go. He will walk on the new course. The command value of the anchor point over the orientation of the body is fabulous to behold. If you didn't know this about anchor points, you might have trouble sometime handling some other body. But all bodies are built inside this electronic structure, and all bodies are built to respond to and be oriented with this electronic structure. And what we call flesh is really held in space by an electronic pattern composed of golden balls. The test of this is whether or not it works on a preclear, and it sure does, because now and then you get a preclear who can't exteriorize by the time he runs step two or step three or something like that. You ask him to look into his head and find if there are any anchor points in there. Well, they probably look black to him. So you have him mock up little gold balls around inside his head for a little while and throw them away, and these anchor points will brighten up and brighten up and brighten up. And all of a sudden you say, oh, yes, yes, there's a lot of these things in here. Under each eye, there's a, looks like a, oh, gee, there are thousands of them under each eye. And there's four big ones, one at the corner of each eye, you know, two to each eye. Yeah. And there's a couple down here in the jaw, the one on each jaw. Oh, boy, and he'll say, one of those is sure out of position. Well, you say, mock up a few more like it. Mock up a few more like it in the position it should be in. Bang, bang, bang. Walks them up. Just gets mental images of them, that's all, and throws them away. And if he does it well enough, actually this jaw anchor point will go into position, you say, be 3 feet back of your head, and he will be. Why? Well, it's just a problem of you're asking him to exteriorize out of no space. You give him space, and he can exteriorize out of the space. If he has no space, he can't exteriorize out of the space. Basically, exteriorization is a problem in anchor points. Now, many a preclear is going to be processed by you as an auditor for dozens and dozens and dozens of hours after he has been able to adjust his own anchor points. In other words, you'll just omit this step. You'll just forget I said anything about this, or the boy did, and you'll just go on and grind, when actually somewhere along the line you sort of said, look around inside your head and see if you can find an anchor point. See if you can find a gold ball. See if you can find a black one. If you had said that, well, you would have the boy exteriorized and in good shape. Now, when you first ask them to look around inside their head, they see them as black, quite ordinarily, if you pre-clear any trouble at all. If he had no trouble exteriorizing, oh boy, can he see anchor points. All right, you ask him to exteriorize, he can't exteriorize. One of the indicated steps on the subject of exteriorization is just look around inside your head and see if you can find some points of one kind or another, or spheres. And he'll say, mock up some. Mock up some gold spheres inside your head and around your head. Just mock up a lot of them and throw them away. And mock up some more and mock up some more and some more and some more and do whatever you please with them. But just mock up some more and all of a sudden you say, yeah, there's some black spheres inside my head. And you say, well, all right, let's mock up some gold spheres in the vicinity of those black spheres. Some more. And all of a sudden it's getting brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter. And all of a sudden the basic anchor points of the skull show up. Now, you say, if this pre-clear can mock up anchor points so well, why don't you have him simply mock up an anchor point and put it into the proper position instead of moving the GE's anchor point into the proper position? Well, let me make that more clear. He finds that he has some places where there ought to be anchor points, and he doesn't immediately see where the anchor points are. So he just gets very gay and happy and says, well, gee, you know, there ought to be an anchor point in that place. He sort of knows this, you see. There ought to be an anchor point there, so I'll just mock one up and put it in that position. Well, the funny part of it is he can very often mock up much prettier anchor points than the GE anchor points and put this in this position. But for the next few days, he'll have a headache until his anchor point is finally uprooted and thrown away. It's not the GE's anchor point. That's what's wrong with it. So whenever you find a pre-clear doing this, make sure that you get him to throw away his anchor point and simply continue with the exercise of mocking up anchor points until the proper GE anchor point materializes and is moved into its position. The GE is only healthy on its own anchor points. And something for you to remember, because you're liable to run into that one. All right. You ask him to mock up these anchor points and mock them up more and more and more and more of them. Pretty soon the GE anchor points get all bright and burnished. What's happening? The pre-clear is actually furnishing juice, you might say, which clean up the GE anchor points. He's feeding him juice. By mocking up similar anchor points, he is really charging up the GE anchor points. And so, the GE anchor points, being out of position because of little electronic swirls and flows and cross riffles and so forth. You know, I mean, there's a little electronic flow going. Let's say this jaw anchor point's out of shape. There's a little electronic flow going right straight through the hole where this jaw anchor point ought to be. See? And every time this jaw anchor point tries to go back into this hole, why, the flow kicks it out again. So he tries to put it back, and the flow kicks it out, and put it back, and the flow kicks it out, and put it back. Well, there's really a flow there because there are other anchor points out of position. So if you keep on mocking up anchor points for this area, it will absorb and adjust the flow. And then, of course, you can put the GE anchor point back in it. But the pre-clear took up and adjusted this flow by putting in substitute anchor points. You see, he let them take the pounding. The mock-ups took the pounding. You know, your mock-ups are real. If your body is real, and if these anchor points hold the space of the body, as they quite observably do, and if you can mock up anchor points, which vastly influence these body anchor points, and which actually can substitute for them and give the body a headache, looks to me like your mock-ups aren't very thin or illusory. It looks to me like they can be considered thoroughly as real as the chair you're sitting in, which they can be, of course. Now, what application does this have? Well, it has the application of adjusting the space of the body. A body has a very difficult time being beautiful or being healthy if its anchor points are all out of position. So this is a necessary step in the handling of the body and is the primary step to be consulted if your preclear, after a little auditing, is having an awful lot of trouble getting out. If you give him a little auditing and he's still having a lot of trouble getting out, for heaven's sakes, try at least to adjust his anchor points by getting him to mock up anchor points around inside his head until he can see his own and then put his own back into place. And after you have audited universe processing for a long time on some preclear, after you've audited this universe processing for some time, he still doesn't exteriorize, remember something else. You should at that time take another whack at anchor points. With any preclear you're auditing, no matter how long it takes for this individual to be brought out of the woods, remember to inject this technique about the adjustment of anchor points. Someplace along the line, you're going to win. And it'll be a faster win than you have ever heard of before. The fellow says, yeah, well, what do you know? But they're all black, he'll say. They're all kind of horrible and black. That's because the energy's all drained down out of them. The electronic flows through from anchor point to anchor point are not in good balance. And so the anchor points are dragging themselves down. Drags the goldenness out of them, which is the fluid energy. And they turn black. Just as you would burn a piece of wood and get it black eventually. And so he goes along, he sees these sooner or later, he adjusts them, all of a sudden his body feels beautiful and life is beautiful. How many are there to adjust? Well, fortunately he can adjust them rather fast, but don't overlook the fact that there can be dozens out of position, seriously out of position, dozens. A couple, 3 hours spent with a preclear doing nothing but adjust anchor points is never misspent, never. Particularly because his primary goal, being in a civilization which has as his primary concern care of the body, care of the body, care of the body, care of the body, his primary concern is putting up this mock-up. That's the one thing a Thetan is trying to do. He's either trying to put up or take down his own mock-up or keep other people from putting up or taking down mock-ups. And he's trying to put up this body as a mock-up. He's in a civilization where the thing to do, part of his basic agreement, is to have a healthy body and so forth. Well, you can do that by adjusting anchor points. You can also change the beauty of a woman quite markedly in two different ways. You could get her to scramble her anchor points up so that she would look like an old bat of about 99. You could actually pull anchor points out of line until she looked like an antique. Or you could take and put anchor points back into position and do it so well, get her to do it so well, do it so thoroughly, that although she was 50, she would start looking like a girl. The skin, for instance, is designed with a certain looseness and so forth to fit over a certain mass, to cover a certain area. All right, her facial anchor points get driven in, thrown out of position, and the next thing you know, her face bone structure. Now, this is something, you see, that could never be credited by medicine. Bones do not get big and get small. Well, they don't. But her bone structure has actually sunk in and gotten smaller. The tissue has actually deteriorated in its volume, and the skin is still the same amount of skin. So what does she get? She gets wrinkles. Now she thinks the thing to do is to go around and get her face lifted. Well, that's a good thing to do, maybe, because it certainly does put back some mass there for the skin to set on, and that's all that face lifting does, actually, is actually put some mass in under the skin. What they do, they take a squirt gun of some sort and take some beeswax. Really, a patient never knows this, you know. They're unconscious under ether while this is being done. And they pay $8,000 to have their face lifted. Well, actually, all the guy does is squirt some beeswax in the proper places underneath the skin. It's quite painful. And the other thing they do is take hold of folds of skin, amputate it, and hook it back up over their ears. Pull it in places where it's not easily seen. They just tighten up the skin that way. Makes them look kind of skull-like. But they do a good job with this plastic surgery, they call it. That's because they use plastic. Well, what are they doing? In essence, they're trying to repair the mass that sits under the skin. Or they're trying to take enough tension out of the skin so that it can cover less mass. It's a problem in masses then. And masses, let me call to your attention, is always a problem in space. You try to get a Cadillac car into the same space as an MG, and you will just have to confess eventually that mass is also a problem in space. And here we have then, in repairing the appearance of the preclear, the primary technique. And until he can do this, he is not going to repair his appearance. I'm awfully sorry to have to make a didactic statement on the matter, but I'm talking from at least 1,000 case histories. I'm talking from an enormous amount of data here. And I found out that the actual repair of the appearance, I'm not talking now about just repair of the body, I'm talking about the repair of the appearance of the body, does not really take place until the anchor points are adjusted. Where another technique or another subject has adjusted the appearance of the body, you accidentally adjusted the anchor points. Let's take running a grief charge. You run a grief charge out of an individual after a death. They've looked very old and haggard. You ran the grief charge out, and you found they look much younger. All right. They must have had a rather temporary disruption of anchor point currents in the vicinity of the face, which running the grief charge immediately repaired. That's an accident that their looks got so much better. Well, the more an auditor depends upon actuality and the less he depends upon accident, the happier that auditor's preclear is going to be and the more successful that auditor is going to be. He shouldn't depend on accidents. There's nothing very mysterious about making space. It is the basic of structure. When you think of structure, first think of space. Don't think of mass. I repeat that. When you think of structure or altering structure, changing structure, healing structure, think first of space. When it comes to handling currents, whether they're electronic currents, emotional currents, or any other kind of currents, think first of space. Space is primary in all such considerations. And the definition of space is a viewpoint of dimension. And the dimension in structure is represented by an anchor point. And that is actually all there is to it. Four anchor points make space. It isn't that the space exists into which you put four anchor points. Before you put up those four anchor points in a tetrahedron or whatever, you actually had no space. You can just grasp that as an auditor, in case it will start to fall apart. A man can't grow unless he has space to grow into. He won't shrink any place unless the space is contracted in that place. This universe is an artificial space universe. One of the giddiest tricks under the sun is the way this universe is put together. You could think, you know, in terms of the fact, well, here's this space, and now we put some anchor points into it. And what I'm trying to do is orient your thinking quite in reverse to what has always been on this. Here's some anchor points. Now we've got some space. Although, when you think of any one of these structural changes, think first of space. But what's primary with regard to space? Anchor points. Without anchor points, there isn't any space. Space is a viewpoint of dimension. If you want to look across a space, you could postulate to yourself, I am now looking across this space. But if you're actually going to look across that space, you have to look over here to a dimension point. I call to your attention Scientology 8-8008, which goes into this rather tremendously. It is the basic material on space, the textbook, little book, goes into this quite considerably. Dimension points, anchor points, dimension points. An anchor point is a dimension point which has a constancy, or which is constantly holding up some space. An anchor point is a dimension point with some constancy. That's why we call them anchor points. All right. Has a lot to do with processing. Your preclear is out of space. You run opening procedure. You say, oh, find some spots in space around here. He almost goes mad. He is so accustomed to having the meshed universe present him with a dimension point. Ready-made, tailor-made dimension point. Here, the meshed universe says, here's the dimension point. So you say, find a spot in this space around here. And he looks and looks and looks, waiting for some hand to be extended from Valhalla or something, presenting him with an anchor point so that he can look at it there. And this is real silly. Why should he do this? Well, he can't find a spot in space without an anchor point. That is his first dedication. And it doesn't occur to him that he can find a spot short of an anchor point. You know, a spot doesn't have to have a mass in it. All he has to do is postulate that there is a position, and he has already got a location. You're trying to re-educate him into postulating some positions. If he could postulate the positions, he could go around and find all the spots in space imaginable, but you'll get some pre-clears, they'll almost blow their brains out. Before they get this straightened out, they'll say, but I have to locate it in relationship to the walls. Okay, locate it in relation, but I know, but... They get very upset about an empty piece of space. Well, that's because they're upset about space in general, because the anchor points belong to somebody else, not to themselves. No anchor points belong to them anymore. Anchor points are owned by everyone else. They have begun to live this kind of a life. They've said, well, that is Chicago because I know Bill there. You know, here's Bill is in Chicago, and there is a Chicago because I know somebody there, Bill, and Bill there in Chicago is a good friend of mine. They're talking about an anchor point of theirs. They're talking about Bill. Bill is an anchor point. You look around through life and find that you have many anchor points in terms of people. But if a person only knew he was alive and had space because other people were alive and had space, he would be having a rough time of it. You can actually do a lot for a case simply by picking up who is the space of this case. And you get universe processing directly. That's the basic question, universe processing. Who's the space of this case? Well, now let's look at space in many other categories. How many ways could you seem to put up space? Let's look at a shiny sun. It's sitting there in the firmament, fermenting. The atomic fission is going zing, 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 and it's putting out photons. And they go out in all directions. So obviously it's making space, isn't it? And we look at a planet, and the light is hitting it from these suns, and it's shining off of the face of the planet, and it's going out in all directions. So it's obviously making space, isn't it? Not really, because it's not looking at a damn thing. It's making no space unless you no, it is making space. But there you are, perfectly convinced that the sun can make space. Why? Because it's shedding light into a space. It is radiating. Therefore, it is sending out Lord knows how many anchor points per millisecond, which are going out there to what tremendous distance. So it's obviously making space. It's not making space because it isn't looking at its own dimensions. It is making as much space as you are looking at. The light reflected off of Earth is obviously making space, isn't it? It's radiating out in all directions. Well, this was the primitive physical concept of space, and you're educated into having that concept of space simply by agreement with the physical universe continually. You've said anything that shines can make space. Worse than that. Anything that's loud can make space. Space is made by a flow. It is not made by a flow. Honest, in the absence of a viewpoint, you could take all of the electricity being manufactured today on Earth and make no space whatsoever, no matter how far you radiated it. Because there wouldn't be any far to radiate it in. Now, this can be a matter of opinion, you understand, but we're only interested in the workability of Scientology. And we have found out that radiantly created space is false space, as far as a preclear is concerned, because he gets quite sick when he considers that energy is secondary to space. You see, radiantly created space says the energy is creating the space. The energy is not creating the space. The viewpoint is creating the space, and the viewpoint is higher than the space. Because a viewpoint can exist without any space and then can create space and creates it by hanging up some dimension points by which to view across a distance, and so has space. But radiantly created space, such as that created by the sun, would collapse immediately in the absence of viewpoints. This is a question of if we weren't here, would the meshed universe be here? Would it be here at all if we weren't here? Well, if we weren't here, it wouldn't be here for us. And that's really all we're interested in. The dickens with a theoretical problem, but the other truth of the matter is if we weren't here, it wouldn't be here. Let's just skip that as a theoretical argument because you could stumble on it and argue about it, and so on. And let's just say, would the meshed universe be here if we weren't here? And, well, if we weren't here, it isn't here for us. And just let it hang at that, and don't bother to get more complicated than that, and we're on quite safe ground. That sun that's sitting up there right now, spitting out photons, and some of its flame, its electronic fission, is going out there 100,000 miles from its surface. And when you get 100,000 miles out from the surface, oh boy, that's quite a roar. It makes actual sound in a vacuum. That's because of the density of the electrons. They can actually relay sound. Electrons being packed close together will relay a vibration which is like sound, which is sound, if sound is the relaying of a vibration, which it is. There are also other things which relay vibrations. But here we have a problem there where this thing is evidently roaring, too, you see. It's a big beast up in the sky. It roars, and it sends forth flashes, and it sends forth long electronic streamers. And, ooh, boy, that's forceful. It's no wonder the Egyptians got down and said, "Oh, Ra, Ra, mighty in thy power, we do..." Yeah, that's where we got the college cheerleader yells. Anyway, it's no wonder that the Egyptian, that primitive peoples, who are all bogged down in all directions and are quite nutty, worship the sun. Energy is up there making space as far as they're concerned, and this is the space it makes. Of course, that isn't anywhere near as sensible as saying that there is an invisible something that nobody knows anything about, who is sort of not even visible at any time, who just by the fact of beingness is actually creating all this space and is everywhere and is omnipotent and omniscient and omnipping and various. Of course, this sun god concept is nowhere near as rational as God is everywhere and nowhere and nowhere and everywhere is nowhere, and that's where we're going. It's when they break down utterly and are not even any longer able to look that a culture goes down to the point of saying, well, the sun isn't God because we don't dare look at it anymore, and we don't even know if it's in the sky, so religion is everywhere, nowhere, where are we going? The local spin bin is two blocks away. At least you could tag this thing, this sun, and say, well, you're to blame for all this space. And you can't even find God to blame him. So we have a problem with cultures and civilizations when they go over the peak, when they come out of the idea that a viewpoint makes dimension. In other words, just the fact that a fellow is there is enough for something to be there. When they come down to that lower basis and say, look, we have to have an energy flow out here to make a lot of space. First, he could just know there was space. There would be space if he merely knew there was space. He'd make a postulate there was space and then not even bother to look, there'd be space. That's because the postulate is in existence. Then the next step is we've got to have energy to block this space out, and there's your first dimension point entrance. And the next step in is we've got to have something radiating energy in order to hold the space out there. He gets this idea because it's a vacuum universe, and he gets the idea of having to have a lot of pressure out to keep the thing from being pushed in. Of course, we're not quite sure what's going to push it in, because if there's nothing outside of this universe, there's no pressure out there to push in this universe. But he thinks that these flows have to exist there in order to distend the space. And the next thing he knows, why he says that's not tenable anymore. I know that's not tenable because there isn't any space at all. I'm very well aware of that because every time I go out for a walk, I run into a tree, so it's obvious that I can't tell where any space is, and becomes a normal Homo sapiens of this modern culture, which has the concept of the space is made by something which is everywhere but nowhere. Something which is everywhere but nowhere and isn't even looking, but is looking at you and notes all the sparrows falling. And is omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent, and omnivorous. Here, you think now I'm being blasphemous. It's impossible to be blasphemous about a non-existence. Well, by definition, God is non-existent, isn't he? Well, so therefore I'm being blasphemous about nothing, and I can prove it. Now, here we have the sun up there right now, sending out radiant streams in all directions. Is it making space? Well, apparently, yes. Apparently. It's not looking, though. So it's not making space, is it? What we're looking at is the tail end of the most complicated concatenation of agreements you ever cared to put your foot into. And lo, you did. And so you can see the sun. Well, we won't even bother with that. We've got something up there which is doing a mock-up of a thetan. The mess universe has mocked up a gigantic thetan. You see that? Made it out of energy. Any one of you has more capability than the sun. But there's that big mock-up out there, and so you agree that it can make space. Anything that is shiny, you can agree, will make space, and anything that makes noise, lo, the smallest child or barking dog, is, by the concept of the GE, making space. So you agree to all these things make space. Well, then it's no wonder that you get fouled up with space, because it certainly can't be then your space, because your space would radiate from where you were. And if nothing is radiant from where you are, it must be somebody else's space you're living in. And so we're into an immediate problem of ownership. Somebody else owns everything. Well, the pre-clear can't get mock-ups is in that computation, or worse. Somebody else owns everything. At least he's in this one. Somebody else owns everything. Why? Because it's somebody else's space, so therefore I'm in somebody else's universe. The thetan, sitting in the middle of the GE, is sitting in the middle of space put up there by the GE. And in view of the fact that he's living there, in that space, believes himself to be living in other space than his own, which you say he is. But what happens to him the second he begins to repair this space? He's senior to that space. He doesn't have to create anything to own it, you know. He can simply come into possession of it by controlling it. You've let this fellow create some space for the GE just by putting up some anchor points around the GE. But then, supposing he gets down and adjusts the reel, honest to goodness, and these are just as real as pebbles on the beach, these GE anchor points. They aren't something illusory. Don't ever get into that trap. They're not. They could probably, if you could get several of them together and put them on a scale, so they would probably have weight, micro weight, but it'd still be weight. All right. Where he can place those anchor points around, where he can adjust them, he not only gets the GE into good shape, but he makes that space his own, and so he can exteriorize out of it. And you can't get anybody to exteriorize out of any space anywhere unless it's his space. Nobody will ever get out of this universe until he owns all the space in it. Nobody will ever get out of the physical universe out here until he can own and be perfectly cheerful to look at and occupy the position of the whole shooting match. The way out is through. Now, let's look at the body as the microcosm, that being the macrocosm. And we look at the body and find out that if we adjusted the anchor points inside the body, if we adjusted that, we would have at once put the body into good shape, which would have ended our cycle of action since we were always trying to put the body in good shape. After we found out we couldn't make nothing at it, one fell swoop. And so we adjusted the anchor points of the body. We could handle it. Therefore, we take over ownership of that space. Bang, we own that space. Can we get out of it? Why, certainly we can get out of it. It's ours. And that is why an individual can exteriorize when he adjusts the body anchor points. But look at the traps that are trapped here for a Thetan to fall on the body's face about. How many ways is the body making space? How many aberrated ways is the body making space? Well, let's say somebody has shiny eyes. Did you ever really fall back from thoughts of treachery in the face of beauty? Beauty's making space. Let's take a very, very pretty child with very bright eyes. You think twice before you do anything to the child. Obviously, the child's making space. Why is the child making space? By being bright. That is to say, by reflecting light. That makes space. All right, let's look a little further. And let's find that the sex to no scale in its entirety is a gradient of making space. Let's find the most base space which is made by the GE. Sex. Making space with sex. Making space by sexual allure. This is sort of a reverse way of making space. But it's there. Making space with semen. Hardly any girl who is doing all right fails to make space with perfume. If it's only the native perfume of her own body. She's making perfume space. It's space, though, on the same old basic radiant space construction. See? That's just the sun making space. It's a misnomer. The sun isn't making space. But the girl can put up the illusion of making space simply by having some perfume. Those particles go out a long way, don't they? All right. She can make as much space as she has perfume. A civilized woman, pretty well pounded down and told she can't have any space and so forth, is very often utterly dismayed when into her community walks some barbaric, uneducated she-devil who wears it by the half bottle. And this civilized woman stands there in utter dismay, watching all the civilized men going off. Well, she says it isn't nice to wear that much perfume. Fact of the matter is, and anything to do with being nice, it isn't very polite of her to make all the space that's being made in an area, but if she wore an acceptable brand of perfume and lots of it, she would have all the consequences of making space. That's why the only dirty words permitted in American advertising are on the bottles of perfume. All right, there's basic on it. Now we take this fellow, we take a man in this character. He's making space. If he's pretty bad off, he'll try to make space with sex. He'll try to go all over the place and have as many women as possible. Makes space, doesn't it? Semen is an anchor point wherever deposited. Now, we just get semen as radiant, you know, as radiant space. You'll find out he has a little bit of space right there. Well, let's go upscale a little bit and run into eating. And between sex and eating, let's find excretia. Freud had a lot to say about excretia. But do you know that excretia makes space? I had a police dog one time who was not well housebroken at all, and he made more space. Sure his space. But that's just another method of putting on anchor points and making space. Completely aside from the fact that there is an ejection where you're actually getting this same radiant manifestation on its most debased level. Odor enters here again. And the person makes such horrible space that nobody can enter it. All right. Now let's go up a little bit more and let's find eating. And do you know men make spaces and women make spaces by eating? Do you know that more basically, animals make space by permitting themselves to be eaten? There are whole lineages of animals, fowl and so forth, which exist today solely to be eaten. But just by letting somebody consume the anchor point, they continue to exist and continue to have space. All the heroism and the beauty and color and bad language and so forth that today fills the motion picture theater's box office is totally dependent upon cows permitting themselves to be eaten. Cowboy Western movies and so forth are utterly dependent upon this fact that cows put out anchor points. That's the space. Everybody eating beef will sooner or later start to get interested in Western movies, naturally. They have unwittingly been interiorized into cows' space. See this covert backwards method of putting out an anchor point. Well, let's look at it. Now let's look at somebody who is getting unbelievably fat. Two ways of getting fat, just a little bit upscale from this. There's quite another method of being big. Quite another method. But every once in a while you find some guy who is, boy, he's gotten real fat and his jowls are sagging and his stomach is protruding way out. So what's he doing? He's trying to make space with food. He's making food push out the body far enough to have space. How are you going to get anybody slim who has a psychological problem? Brother, you're not. Now, when he gets way downscale, do you know he gets unbearably thin? A very fat man can be depressed mentally to a point where he'll get thin. Boy, this is the lowest rung of something, brother. It isn't even safe to be eaten anymore. That's getting pretty far down. And you'll get people who don't even think it's safe to be eaten anymore, convinced they would be eaten if they put out an anchor point, and yet condensing themselves, going way in, real tight, so as not to put out any space with food. They dabble with their food. This is a particular type. It isn't all thin people. It's a particular type of thin person. They just dabble. They don't dare eat very much, and so on. They won't put out food to make space. That's the main problem. Now, let's go up a little bit and find something that lets us sit right in the middle of book one. Making space with symbols. And there's your whole category of sound and everything connected with words, so forth. People make space with sound. He talks big is a colloquialism in the language. A person can have as much space as he can talk into. Now, people, by the way, were surprised, all out of proportion, on the Phoenix Congress when it demonstrated that the sound was simply trailing behind actually manufactured space. You know, I manufactured the space with a couple of anchor points out there and then talked into it at a whisper. And, of course, it went back against the back end of the hall, just boom. I don't know if you've ever heard the tapes of that or not, but it's quite startling that the actual voice tone is registered on the tapes, was not registered to the audience. And I say, now you can hear my voice at the back end of the hall. Actually, the voice which I put out at the back end of the hall was so quiet that if no space had been made first, nobody would have heard it 2 feet from me. And yet it registered that way on the tape. But it didn't register that way in the hall, of course, because you were doing what? That was the space I was talking into. Space is primary here. If you put up the space, if you really manufactured space, you know, I've got a viewpoint of a dimension, and you had a great big dimension sitting out there, and then you talked into it, and you didn't much care how, believe me, you'd arrive at all points of that space. But witness the poor guy who was trying to make space with sound. You know, no viewpoint involved here. He can't look anymore. No anchor points involved. He's just going to take sound alone and make space with it. Oh, is he getting into trouble? Whether he does it with the written word or the spoken word or a tin whistle. A Latin with an automobile horn under his control is very, very interesting in terms of made space with sound. He's trying to make enough space for his car to drive through with his horn. If you took the horn off of his car, he would be rather convinced that there was no space in front of him for his car to go into. He isn't so much worried about pedestrians. They hit those and knock them off, as a matter of course. In fact, half the time don't even honk for those. The time when they honk the most is when they got a broad, wide open highway. They honk, 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 and off they go. Now, they're making space. Factually, the computation, it's computing, is that if they have enough sound going out in all directions, then they'll have some space to live in. Some of their families would give you this idea. You get down into the back country and listen to the noise and commotion in some barbaric household. It's fascinating. You get the Indios and so on back in the mountains of Mexico and so on. The amount of uproar that can occur in one household is unbelievable. But you know, they wouldn't have any space at all if they didn't make that much noise. You wonder why people make that much noise. Well, they have to have space. The reason the little kid yells and talks and so forth, he's being pretty well driven in by the society, so he makes some space for himself with sound, symbols. What about the fellow who writes things on walls and puts things in washrooms? He's trying to make space with symbols. This whole deal about who was it that was here all during the war? Kilroy. Yeah, Kilroy was here. He's just trying to make space. You see, he's got to carry his anchor points around in a hod or something of the sort and lay them down. All right, let's go up a little higher. And how about making space with effort? A working man is making space with effort. He makes this, he makes that, he puts effort in here, and he puts effort in there. He creates structures. He creates things and has as much space as he creates things. Now, actually, an organization, a society, an individual has a tendency in this society to exist as long as he has created space existing. I don't think you probably would know anything about Egypt at all if somebody hadn't put some pyramids in there. I think it would have gone by the boards. I don't think anybody dares change the name or really alter the face of Egypt as long as some pyramids stay there. Somebody made some space, and we know about it. Practically every other country in the northern coast of Africa, there on the Mediterranean, practically every other country has changed its political significance, its boundaries, its this-a, its that-a. Everything is altered about them. But there is one place that is nailed down. Egypt. It has some very solid structures there. Somebody made some space there. Now, up the coast a little way from there, there's a fellow who gets awfully mad about people making space. They are still, to this day, trying to take down an enormous monument that was put up to Cleopatra's sister. And nobody can tear it to pieces. They're having an awful time. It's too big. The attitude of the barbarian toward massive buildings, his efforts to destroy them, and the invention of gunpowder itself is actually trying to undo this business of making effort stand for space. And what do you think that sun is out there? That's effort making space. That's on the effort band. And above that, have you ever run into anybody who was trying to make space with emotion? If they ever tried to get anything done at all, it had to be done in a rage. They made space with rage so that they could work in it. And let's go one step above that and find that individuals, with all the tricks they use of making space, make it best with the GE by looking with the eyes. And they try to make space for the GE by looking with the eyes. This is not feasible, of course. The space can be made by a Satan looking, but not by a pair of binoculars sitting there looking. You can put all the binoculars around you want to, and you still won't have a viewpoint unless you've got somebody to look through it. So individuals will look piercingly, you know, real piercingly at people, trying to make enough space, you see, to occupy the other person. All right, now we get up to know. And the unfortunate part for the whole society is that if an individual knows he has all the space there isn't anybody can do a single thing to him. Because there's no mechanics you can monkey with. No mechanics at all. Fella knows he has a lot of space, so he has a lot of space. So people walk into him and bounce. And that's about the way it goes. Well, there's space. Now, when you get a pre-clear with a somatic here and a somatic there and a somatic in his stomach and a somatic someplace else, we're not looking at something for you to process, but we're looking at something you can understand. What's he trying to do? Why has he got a somatic there? Well, once upon a time, he tried to make space by eating his stomach. He can't do that anymore. He's not succeeding in making space by eating. Stomach's collapsed one way or the other. He's failed. So he's got a stomachache. What about the fellow who has a constant mouth somatic? He's tried to make space with words, 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 and then somebody collapsed the space by pulling his words away from him. So just understand with this business of making space that there are many illusory ways of making space. The best way is just to know you have space. So therefore, the best process is to simply change somebody's postulates.